Coming from the backwoods of New Jersey, welcome to the Jersey Guys Music Podcast, where we feature in-depth music discussions and interviews with special guests from the worlds of hard rock, heavy metal, and AOR music. So settle in and crank it up. Now, here are your hosts, the Jersey Guys themselves, Tom and Mark.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Jersey Guys podcast. I'm Mark Ballow here with my co-host, Tom Coyne. And joining us today is special guest Michael Schotten. You guys would know him from Von Groove. And there's been a few other projects we're going to talk about that he's done along the way. So welcome to the show, Michael.
Thanks, Mark. Nice to be with you. It's going to be a lot of fun today.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. We appreciate your time. I wanted to start off saying a little bit of a congratulations. The news broke a few weeks back there that there's going to be a new Von Groove album after almost 25 years, right?
Yeah, well, with the original three guys. Malad and I did a bunch of records, and but now we're joined with our old bandmate, Matthew Gerard. So it's Matthew Gerard, Malad, and myself, the original three. And I got to be totally honest with you, man. This has been the coolest, funnest thing. It's like no time has gone by. Like, we're always on the phone with each other, excited about the new ideas. We just signed a deal with Frontiers just recently, and already I'm looking at the screen right now, and we're already about 12 ideas in, and there's more. We're going to probably write 20 ideas, I'm sure, 25 ideas, and pick the best ones and send it out and see how everybody likes it. But also, it sounds like it did 30 years ago. Like, everybody still sounds great. Everybody, you know, I think I'm singing very, very well still. And Maladdin, I mean, king of riffs. Mm-hmm. And Matthew just still kills it on bass.
Well, I was going to ask you that because, obviously it's been close to 25 years. Why was this year, recently now, why was this the right time to get back together?
Well, it was, you know, I've done some work with Frontiers in the past, and Serafino reached out and Mario reached out, and we started kind of throwing this idea of like, what if we did a record? Why not give it a shot? And we all contacted each other and kind of went back and forth, and it just seemed like the right time, you know. With all honesty, we are all just so excited about doing this. It's so far, I mean, it's just been a labor of love and just exciting and fun, and just brings back some great memories of a great writing team, a great band. In my opinion, and in so many other people's opinion, I think Von Groove was pretty much the perfect storm. I think just our timing was a little bit, maybe a year too late. But you had guys like Matthew, who is great with production, great bass player, great writer. You've got a guy like Maladdin, who great with production, great writer, great guitar player. You've got a guy like me who, you know, I played drums my whole life, and I've been a singer and production and writing, and the three of us together, it was just the perfect storm. That first year before we got the EMI record deal, we worked every day. That was our full-time job. We just worked every day. We met at the same place, worked every day, and wrote and wrote and wrote, and came up with that record. And it kind of feels like that right now again.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like I don't talk to them for a week. Oh, here's an idea. We just sort of fluff it off. We're actually like a bunch of kids, kind of back 30 years ago, or however long ago it was. You know, it's been a lot of fun. It's been great, and it's been very uplifting for all of us.
Cool. I'm looking forward to that for sure.
It's going
to
rock too.
Are you guys aware of the fact of what a cult classic that first album was and still is to this day?
I guess you don't think about it. I people have told me that before, and I think it is a great record. And we were all just so bummed out that it never really got the legs because of the timing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, 1992.
Every one of those songs.
That was like late in the game, right? I mean,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
I mean, when when Once Is Not Enough was out, it was already getting a lot of legs on charts and a lot of attention. And then one day, Pat Benatar, Slaughter, and us, we got called and we were off the label.
Wow.
It was very unfortunate.
Yeah. EMI, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it happened to a lot of bands. It wasn't just EMI. Sure. Yeah. It was the times, and you know the way the record business is. It's very unforgiving, and unfortunately, that's the way it went.
Yeah. And oddly enough, there were two bands at that time from Canada that really exploded on the scene, Harum Scarum and Von Groove. And both were kind of always labeled with, if these guys would have come out a couple of years earlier, they would have been huge. And I've always felt that about both bands. I mean, Harum Scarum has had a pretty long career. They've done all right for themselves. But Von Groove, really, that album was like a lifesaver for guys like us that were into melodic rock, because the pipeline was cut off. You know, so you were pretty much, you know, looking around for, and when this dropped, it took a lot of people at that time, you know, by surprise, like how good it was.
Well, thanks, Thomas. Thank you. We're incredibly proud. We're very proud of all the work we've done over the years. You know, there's some great songs and great records.
Now, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the second album, which out of all the Von Groove albums is by far my favorite one. And I remember when it came out, there was some of the reviews on it were mixed because it didn't sound like the first album.
Right.
But being somebody that grew up in the 60s and 70s like myself, I totally got the album. It was a throwback sound. It reminded me, correct me if I'm wrong, I know I could be, reminded me a lot of Heart. There were a lot of things in the songwriting, your vocal style. It sounded like it could have been even a Heart album to me. And I'm not a big Heart fan, but it reminded me of that. But I absolutely loved that sound because it sounded like a 70s album to me, like a 70s album I would have loved when I was a teenager. What made you guys change the style? And how did those songs, which are one better than the other, how did the whole album come together?
Well, first of all, I got to tell you, I'm a huge Sopranos fan. And when I'm hearing you talk, you go, Hot. It sounds so cool.
Well, I'm a bogus Jersey guy, first of all. I'm from Brooklyn. Mark's a career Jersey guy. I'm only out here 3 years. So this is a bona fide Brooklyn accent.
it just sounds so great. The second album, we were in shock. You know, right after the loss of the EMI situation, then we sort of just kind of we weren't really talking to each other for about a month after that, just because we were all just sitting back in shock. And we got back together and started writing. And then I think maybe feeling the aftermath of the loss of the deal because of music was going this way, we almost kind of started trying to kind of contend with the trend. And In my opinion, I think it was a bit of a mistake. I kind of think we should have done. I think we all think that now. I think we think now we should have just continued doing what we did, and we're like a Def Leppard who just stayed the course. This is what we do, and that's what we do, and that's what we're going to keep doing. No. And that sort of started coming more around in the third record and the fourth record, where it was more of that melodic thing. There were songs on the second record like Queen's Logic, which sounded like a rock band, but was sounding a little bit more grungy-ish. But I like the record. There's a lot of great songs on that record, and they're really fun to play live.
Oh, the song Rainmaker is phenomenal.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
Yeah, I love that album. Like, really, like, out of everything that you've ever done, that's my favorite album because
Thomas, thank you.
My roots are the 70s, you know. I'm in my 60s, so like I grew up in the 70s with.
Yeah, buddy, you and me both. Like that's
so when I heard this, it was so well done, and I think the biggest problem with a lot of the fans of this music at the time were younger than me, so like a lot of that 70s thing didn't connect with people that were younger than me, and they didn't really get the vibe because I remember reading reviews where they said it sounded like grunge, and to me it didn't sound anything like grunge. It sounded like a retro 70s hard rock record.
Yeah, I could see. Like I said, at the time, we were kind of trying to lean a bit that way, but maybe in doing so, we created something else. But we're very proud of the record. There was later in our careers, we kind of look back on that and just sort of thought, perhaps, what if? It's the what ifs. It's always the look back into the what ifs. What if we had stayed the course and just did another album like the first album, big production, big sound, big vocals, big melodic choruses? Should we have just stayed that path? You know, it doesn't matter at this point, but that second record, I mean, we all still love the record and love the writing.
Now, if you did that, would you have done these songs just in a different style, or you would have written songs totally different for the second album?
I think we would have just done probably a different production. We kind of tried a few different things, and I think, we might have just gone with those songs, but just made them a little bit more mainstream, different drum sounds. We've thought about that, and we actually were looking at the idea of maybe taking that second record and changing things and remixing it, if it was possible. So since the time we've got back together, we've all had some great. It's just been great talking again and writing and looking back and all the work that we've done together.
Yeah. Well, you talked about a minute ago, you said certain songs from that second album were great to play live. Yeah. As a band, did Von Groove, did you guys do a lot of touring?
Oh, we did some live shows, and the band was great live. Like it was a very strong band live. We never seemed to get as much live time in as I think we should have.
Well, Tom and I were talking about the dynamic, because I don't know if you can see behind here. I mean, the stuff that Tom's into, and he talked about being a little older. He's a big, you know, Allman Brothers Grand Funk guy. And we were talking about the dynamic of your band, a three piece, where you were not only the drummer, but the lead singer. How did that kind of come about with you? You know, you said you're always a singer, but you're always a drummer and stuff like that. How was that dynamic of the band set up like that?
Well, the original sort of way it just became was a writing band at first, and I was playing all the drum parts and doing all the singing and doing the background vocals. We brought some friends in to help with the thicken out the background vocals, but that's just the way we work. It was like kind of a Genesis situation where Phil would sit and play all the drum parts, and then he'd turn around and go do all the singing parts, and somebody else would play it live. So that was our vision, was I would have played the drums on the records as writers. And we work well together with me playing drums and Matt playing bass and Mladen playing guitar. We wrote so closely, it just made sense that I was there to play all the parts. And you know, I'm a pretty capable drummer, so we got through that stuff. But live, I'd be more up front, and we'd have a drummer.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is what we've done in the past.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that, because did you guys play in the States a lot at all?
Played a couple gigs in the States, yeah, but not a lot. Again, we haven't had a much of a live career.
Yeah, yeah, no, because we were talking about that. It's such a dynamic, and it's you're trying to think about where you. And it's funny because you said you actually had a drummer, so I didn't know that, and I wasn't aware of that. So that's interesting. Yeah,
yeah, we've had a couple guys play with us over the years, and great, great drummers. I mean, we had Mark Cabrazan play with us. Who is great? A guy named Chris McNeil. We've had him play with and fantastic drummers.
Okay.
See, my guess is that you were a big Grand Funk fan, and Don Brewer used to sing half of their songs. He was the drummer.
Well, you'd be surprised. Actually, Thomas, you'd be surprised at the amount of drummers that are great singers. Let's start right here. Lou Graham. Hmm. Steve Perry.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd heard that.
Yeah.
Steven Tyler.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Don Henley. Phil Collins.
Right.
Levon Helm.
Yeah.
Wow. You'd be
and I could add one, the guy that we had on the podcast that I never knew, Rob Rock, started out as a started out as a drummer. And that's where I got the idea with Don Brewer, because he actually was telling us that he wanted to pursue, you know, singing. I mean, he ended up becoming like one of the power metal singers of all time.
Wow. But
he didn't really want to give up the drums, and he was a big Grand Funk fan, and he loved Don Brewer, and he wanted to sing behind the kit. But you just named another bunch of guys that
Peter Gabriel was a drummer.
Right. Yes, that I know. Yeah,
Peter Gabriel was a drummer as well. Yeah. So
it's not as oddball as people think it is.
Yeah,
yeah, and believe it or not, singing and drumming are kind of tied together. There is a connection. There really is. Like I've had people when they've come, I've done gigs around Toronto, and I play drums and sing, and people go, "How do you play drums and sing?" And I just go, "Very well." Anyway, no, but the rhythmic cadences of the voice are still broken up in all the rhythmic subdivisions of the drums.
And we're leaving out the band, another Canadian band, Exciter, was a thrash metal band, and the drummer sang everything.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And they were a speed metal band.
Night Ranger.
Yeah.
Yeah. He sings. Yeah.
Triumph.
Yeah.
Right.
Triumph. There you go. There's another one. Another Canadian band.
Mm-hmm, yep.
So we'll move to the third. I'm not going to go through every single album, but the third album, we go back now to a style similar to the first album, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Now you move to MTM, and I think it was Bad Knuckle in Japan that put it out, right?
Yeah, correct.
Now, was that you guys wanted to do that, or the labels leaning on you? Let's go back to that first album.
Well, I think a bit of both. I think the labels were kind of fans of the first record, and as you've mentioned, the second record got some criticism, and people kind of either loved it or they kind of went, not so much. So the labels, as well as us, you know, we went through all that time with the second record. We thought, okay, let's go back to what we do. And the labels were, yes, that's what we want. So that's basically the way that record came around.
And that album seemed to have gotten a pretty good buzz. I know in Europe and Japan, it came out with a different track listing too. You actually had if you were a fan like myself, you had to buy both versions to get all the songs. And from years of CD collecting and watching bands and everything, that was usually, when stuff like that happened, you could see like the labels were very interested in the band. They wanted to put their spin to sell their copies and vice versa. So did that third album do good?
It did very well. And we got, live, we got requests the requests was a lot of tunes from that record that people wanted to hear live. And in the different territories, they were always asking for more saleability. They would ask for certain tracks, a bonus track for the European version, and then the Asian tracks, they wanted something else to make their version special. So we would write extra tunes to provide for that.
It was a good marketing strategy because I could tell you as guys that were, we still buy physical music.
Yeah.
It would drive you nuts because you would get the CD and then, I used to always get Jap pressings and Mark would get Euro and we'd see bonus tracks, the different bonus. Now you got to go buy the other CD. So the strategy did work.
Yeah.
It would aggravate people, but CD collectors and music collectors still have to have everything. So even though you're aggravated, you ordered the other copy of the CD to have both.
Well, listen, guys like me wish and pray that there were more people in this world like you who are just real music fans who want to have that material and own it. And instead of just download it and dispose it,
Yeah. If it's in your blood, that's the way you are. I mean, there are some younger people that are like that, but not too many of them. They're just fine not having physical I grew up in, you probably could relate to this. When we were kids, the beauty of the album, the physical vinyl and I still do this to this day. I want to read to see who engineered, who produced it, who's doing background vocals on it. I want to see pictures of the band, what do they look like now? You want, I like that physical, connection to the bands that I'm into, not just to have the music. It's just like it's very cold to me.
Well, Thomas, you're right. The thing is, in our era, we developed relationships with the band. The record label had relationship with the band. They would invest in the first record and they'd invest in the second and they would build it. Mm. Now, not so much. It's like one record, one single, done.
Yeah.
Downloaded that, disposed, everything. It's just not the same where, you owned a record. You could read about the band. You could, like you say, understand who produced it, who played on it, the names of the people in the band. Now, I'm not sure if that matters as much.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong on this. I was watching something on YouTube, I think, and you talked about being a big fan of Rick Beato. Is that true?
Yeah, I love Rick Beato.
Oh, he is great. He has a great, podcast type of YouTube channel or whatever you want to call it. But it's funny what you just talked about because what he does, he takes those things where he goes the top 10 Spotify songs of today, and he talks about them and he's, why is this so popular, And it's interesting how music is today.
Well, I think Rick Beato, he came out of nowhere and he's provided a form of not only education, but when he does something, I just watched the Michael McDonald interview and love, I've always been a big fan of Michael McDonald. I mean, how can you not?
Sure.
He, what an influential voice, but it was amazing for me through the Beato interview, just to see how humble Michael McDonald is. And in some slight ways, he's a little bit self-deprecating, where he was actually putting down his piano playing and he doesn't, but I mean, the guy is just, he's amazing. But Rick Beato does amazing work with, interviewing, like, as he calls them, my dream guests.
Yeah.
And some of the interviews I've watched, it's just like, wow, like the Sting interview was great. And
yeah.
The Brian May interview. And
Alan Parsons one I watched not long ago.
It's fantastic. Like, to be able to just sit and listen to these guys talk is amazing. During COVID, I actually became Facebook friends with Alan Parsons, and we were just bantering back and forth about various things. And,
nice.
It was great. It was kind of cool. I'm like, I'm talking to Alan Parsons.
Yeah.
It was very cool.
So continuing on with the Von Groove stuff, I don't want to leave out the last couple of albums. Driving Off the Edge of the World, that album now became the newest one at the time. What was the process behind that?
Well, again, just a process, just writing the best songs we can write. And we were kind of just going for maybe a little bit more edge on that record.
That's what I got from it too. I just re-listened to it the other day. It was a little more edgy.
Yeah. And that was a fun record to do, because we also did that record very quickly. We did drums here at my place, at my studio. My whole upstairs living room has a vaulted ceiling and wooden floors, and it's got hatch bays like that built into the wall. And I could walk you around here a little bit if you want. It's got patch bays built in the wall. So we did live drums up in the living room.
Oh, wow.
Maddie was down here with Maladin. Engineered it, got the drum sounds together. And then basically just it happened. Like, I think all the drum tracks were done within 2 afternoons. It was done. And the guitar parts and bass parts, everything went down fast. Vocally, I just went in the booth. And Matt sat in here. And he just basically 4 takes. And we just went. That was what it was.
Wow.
It all went down very quick. And I think there is something about that record, now that I think about it, that does have, if I could use the word, maybe it has a bit more urgency. Like, the first album is very slick and produced, and man,
it's got the big budget sound, the first album.
But the Driving Off the Edge of the World, that whole record, I think there is a bit more live urgency to it, because again, like, it's not like I got to sing the songs 100 times and get to know them. It was basically I just went in there and just busted my balls, just sang my ass off, and Matt was going, that's great, it's great, let's go, okay, let's do another track. Bang, 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 we're done. Oh, wow. That was a tidy 20 minutes.
When did you set up a studio in your home? How did you do that?
Oh, I've had a studio in my house for about 20 years.
Okay.
I'm going to take you down here for a second, because I've got this is the control room, my main control room here. So that's this. Mm-hmm. There you go. My control room. Walk down here. I've got a little ISO room in here. There's an ISO room sitting in here.
Wow.
See a U87 set up with a 414. And then in here, little amp room. All right. Red plate amp that Rick gave me, Rick Emmett.
Ah.
And as we go down to the kitchen area, believe it or not, I have, that's a Hammond B3.
Oh, wow.
Oh, boy, that's awesome.
Huh. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Wow.
And I'll take in here. I'm actually doing epoxy flooring in my basement. So here's the bass room pedals, the bass pedals for the organ. There's my beautiful Gretsch drums. And this is a 147 Leslie.
We're getting your thumb. You got to move your thumb.
Oh, sorry, my thumb. That's a 147 Leslie.
Okay.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's for the organ.
Yeah, yeah.
The drum set again. Yeah. Working our way back out here again. Leslie is such an amazing sounding amplifier. obviously it's great for the organ, but it also sounds great when you run guitar through it, which and piano. I mean, no quarter Led Zeppelin. That's all through a Leslie.
The best.
Yeah, and the vocal, I think, close the door, turn off the lights. That was all through a Leslie. So that's it's just such a cool thing. Anyway, I don't get to use it enough, but when I do, I get all pins and
needles. I saw them in '77 at the Garden. Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah, amazing.
Yeah,
what a band.
And when I explained to people,
the perfect storm.
No, opening band. They played for 3 hours and 15 minutes on that tour. Yeah. They did do that acoustic set in the middle, so it was like somewhat of a, you know, a little bit of a break for them. But there was no breaks. There was no, it wasn't like one, you know, like intermission. They played for over 3 hours.
That's incredible. Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
So I'm going to take you to the last Von Groove album where Matthew left now and was replaced by the bass player from II, which was a band that I liked.
Tommy Lewis.
Right. Right.
Tommy Lewis, yeah.
They were
Tommy Lewis is a great friend. We've been friends for years. Tom Lewis and I also did a record with a fellow named Gordon Depp, who was in a band called The Spoons. He was a singer, guitar player from The Spoons.
I have a Spoons CD. I think one that came out in 88.
See if you can find a record by a band called Five Star Fall. That was myself, Tommy, and Gord. Five Star Fall.
What year did that come out?
Oh, my gosh, I can't remember. Probably, 2005, maybe?
Really? I don't know that.
Maybe around there. My memory's fading. I'm a little old.
Yeah, okay, I got to look for that. I didn't know that. So under what circumstances did Matthew leave? He had enough of obligations?
No. Matt was just busy doing other stuff. He was doing some work for Disney, and he was busy doing all that stuff, and we just wanted to make a record, and Maddie was busy, and no bad blood. That's another thing too, is that people ask us, you guys, did you not get along? And no, like Mladen, I talk to Mladen all the time. He's one of my dearest friends in the world still. Beyond music, Mladen and I are very good friends. And same with Matt. Like Matt and I have always been great friends. We lost touch for a few years due to work. But, you know, Matt just called me yesterday. We're going through parenting advice. We're talking about being fathers and, you know, our kids, and my kids are a little older than his kids, and just trying to share some ideas as fathers. Yeah. Like, not even talking about music, but just talking about being parents.
Yeah.
We've become our fathers.
Yeah.
Yes. How does that
you know
happen? That,
you know that time in your life where you're a young man and you're, you know, rocking the world, and all of a sudden you start saying things, you catch yourself and you go, geez, my father, that sounds like my dad.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Have I got hair on my ears?
Right. And when somebody called you, like my son is a lot younger than my daughter's. He's in his early 20s. Yeah. So like when I'm with him and he's with his friends, they call me Mr. Coin. And I hate it. It's like I never wanted to be. You know, and I always tell him when we leave them, I said, tell your friends to call me Tom. You know, it's like it's Mr. Coin is my father, not me.
I'm wearing my Depends. I'm peeing right now.
Right. Anyway. But I think it's something with the rock mentality, right? It's that little part of you. If you're like a rocker, you never want to give that up. And really, you never shed that 20-year-old version of yourself.
No, I mean, I'm 63 now, but I feel great. I feel fit. But my brain isn't 63. My brain still feels like I'm 30.
Same thing with me.
But then there's those times where you go to do something. You're at the gym or you go to do something at the gym. You go, oh, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem with having a brain like that. Yeah, I mean, I live with that. That's basically my whole life of, you know, I'm an avid runner and I go to the gym a lot.
Good
and
for
I
you.
Still have that mentality of 30 at 66. And, you know, the injuries, I get sick a lot. You know, it's because I'm just constantly pushing.
Hey, after this interview, you and I are going to talk about running. Okay. Go ahead. And moving on.
All right, moving on. We're going to talk about Air Times, the project you did with Rick Emmett.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
I wanted to ask you that. No, because that's one of the things. You know, 2001 was the last Von Groove album, right? And so you obviously went on to do some other things. You had the studio, but there was a couple higher profile things that I know Tom and I want to talk about. But one of them is that Airtime album with, you know, Rick Emmett, of course, of Triumph fame. Yeah, talk about that. What did you want to add to that?
No, just in, how did you get together with Rick? And the album itself, I was a big fan of. So I wanted to know what, you know, how the whole thing came together.
Well, it's a funny meeting. For about 25 years, I used to work with a company called Jeans and Classics, and they're a wonderful company run by an amazing man. His name's Peter Brennan. And I was doing an orchestra show. So I used to go out and sing with orchestras all over North America and sing Queen, Zeppelin, Eagles, McCartney, U2, and various other things, whatever. But a great group of people that we worked with, just amazing, amazing people. And I was doing an orchestra show, and Rick ended up on the show, and him and I got chatting, and I, we exchanged numbers, and he knew that I had sang on the Triumph record that Rick wasn't on, that was with Phil X.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Edge of Excess, I believe, right, was the name of the record.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got chatting. Rick and I hit it off right away, and I called him a couple weeks later, and I was working on a kids project. I was putting some kids music together, and I had a jazz tune, which was the theme song for the show. And I called him up. I said, hey, Rick, I got this jazz tune. What are you doing? Do you feel like coming over and playing on it? He goes, yeah, I'll come over. Rick comes over, and we started working on that. Then there was a couple more songs on this thing that I had. And then Rick had some acoustic things that he was working on. I just said, yeah, just come over. And him and I have, Rick and I have developed this very close friendship. Like I would honestly say Rick is one of my dearest friends in the world. And we have this thing where we get together to record, but it always is sort of interrupted or followed by soup and a sandwich. we always go to my living room, sit in the kitchen, just sit at the table and soup and sandwich, cup of tea. And then we either resume recording or it's finished. We have a great time, and we just start working on some ideas. And we started, I said to him, I said, what if you and I were to do a rock record together? And we kind of entertained that. And then I remember I told him I had some contacts with European labels from the Von Groove thing. And he's, yeah, that sounds intriguing. We started writing some ideas, and it just became this thing. And we had an amazing time recording the record. We had such a great time. He and I found out that we have an amazing blend vocally, doing harmonies. We actually sat right here, right where I'm sitting, him beside me, doing harmonies. We switch parts, double it, triple it, and it was lightning fast. And of course, Rick is an incredible guitar player.
Sure.
He's so good. He's so good, and he's such a joy to work with, and so easy to work with, and so gifted in so many ways.
We've talked about this, Tom and I. I mean, you talk about, there's a couple guys out there, we talk about those double threats, right? Like a Dave Menichetti, with great vocalist, great guitar player. A guy we just lost earlier in the week, John Sykes, right? I mean, talk about a double threat. And talk about, you know, a Rick Emmett. I mean, a guy that, an unbelievable singer, but a great guitar player too.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if a lot of people know that. I mean, Rick is an amazing rock guitar player, but he's also a very skilled jazz player.
Yeah.
He is so skilled in terms of his chordal vocabulary. He can play beautiful nylon string. He and I, and a fellow named Pablo, and a guy named Oscar Lopez, all three very well-known guitar players. We did a record, 2010, maybe? I can't remember. Sorry, guys. I'm a little vague on this. The record was called Trifecta, and all it was these three guitar players playing together, and it was instrumental. And Pablo is a well-known nylon string guitar player who shares the same birthday as I do, so we always text each other on our birthdays. Oscar Lopez, another well-known nylon string guitar player, and Rick stayed on steel string acoustic, and we created some beautiful world sounding music. Just absolutely gorgeous music. Another fun time producing that record together, which was a joy. And again, Rick shows, if you get to hear that record, you'll get to hear a different side of Rick as well on that.
Has there ever been in 2007, 2006, 2007 was when the Airtime album, yeah, Liberty Manifesto came out. Has there ever been talk about doing anything more?
Oh, him and I, we talk every now and again about it. You know, I keep saying, we should do one more, man. And then, we're just sort of looking at the music business and going, is there a reason why? And I just look at him and say, because that's what we do. And he goes, yeah. you never know what can happen. Rick's got some other things on the go too. He's got his book and his poetry book that mm-hmm. he's doing, and he's got a few things on the go as well. So you never know.
Okay.
We're old, but we're not cold. That's my son says that to me I see him at the gym and he goes, Dad, you're old. You're not cold.
That's a good one.
I love that.
Well, my son refers to me as a fossil at times. So. another project you were in that I was a big fan of was called LRS with Josh Ramos, who Josh was a guest on our show about 2 years ago. Terrific guy.
Josh is a great guy.
Great guy. Mm-hmm. And had Tommy Laverty, which was one of my favorite singers. A guy just never did all that much. And he popped up on this album, and I was a big fan of it. I know Mark was too. If you could tell us how that project came about.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy Laverty from Scott Gorham's 21 Guns. Great singer. But again, like Tom said, didn't really do a whole lot in his career. So, you know.
Well, you know, it was just, I think it was sort of a concept of Serafinos and Frontiers that they wanted to collaborate this super group. And, they've got a fellow named Alessandro was producing the record and did a great job. And we did everything remotely. I did all the drum parts and background vocal parts here. All got sent over like that. Then we went over and shot, there was a couple of videos we did for the record. And we just flew over, did the videos, came home.
Were you aware of Tommy's vocal prowess? Was he a guy you were exposed to at all?
Yeah, I knew of him. Yeah. And love him. Tommy's a great guy. Like we had a lot of fun together. When we finally got to meet each other and hang out for the videos, it just felt like a brotherhood right away.
And Ramos, as you know, is a piece of work.
He is.
The great guy.
What a guitar player, too.
And hell of a player.
What a player. Yeah. Oh, a hell of a player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lovely man. Like what a beautiful, sensitive heart. He's a lovely man.
We had him on, we had a lot of fun with him. He was, he's really out there.
Yeah.
And then there was another project called The Rainmakers that I was a big fan of. If you could tell us about that.
Okay, you're going to have to remind me here.
I hope I don't have the name wrong. Rain Times.
Rain Times.
You know, I got Rainmakers on my head. You did the song Rainmakers, and I'm thinking, Rain Times, I'm sorry.
Okay, you're going to have to remind me, buddy.
Really? Oh, wow, okay.
What did I do on that record?
It's a Frontiers.
You sang.
It's a 2017 Frontiers.
I sang on something.
I guess it wasn't one of your most memorable projects.
No, I'm remembering doing this now. Yes, no, I remember singing on that. It was just something somebody had asked me to participate in, and I was happy to.
Like a hired gun vocalist?
No, it was really all it was. Yeah. Just, sing. And I remember doing it now. It's all coming back. Okay.
Okay.
The Alzheimer medication is kicking in. I remember doing that now, and it was it's fun. Just like the projects in your life, they come and they go. And you know, if you're a busy guy, I tend to keep myself pretty busy, and things happen, and you do things, and you participate, and it's a joy. And then you're on to the next thing. So, yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of things I'm going to learn today.
Well, I'm getting even more out there.
Going down deeper into the rabbit hole here.
You were in a project called The Outpatients. And I remember when I bought this album, I was already not expecting it to sound like Von Groove. And it's actually not a bad album. How did you get involved with this project? Because it seemed like very out of the box for what people knew from Michael Schotten.
Well, it's a bit of a... bit of a story. A good friend from my past, Noel Golden, who was producing the record, who I'd worked with many, many times, the Triumph Records and all sorts of records. On the first Von Groove record, I worked with Noel too. Noel was engineering some of that. Noel called me one day and said, "Mike, I've got a project here. We've auditioned all kinds of singers and we just haven't found anybody. Like, can you just in your studio, I'm going to send you a 2-mix. I'm going to send you what the vocal is supposed to sound like. Can you just do a vocal, quick vocal and send it to me?" I said, "Yeah, sure, Noel." So I remember, I think I sent it to him. I FedExed it on a Monday and I got a call on the Wednesday from Noel, and Noel just said, "Hey, just want to talk to you about this project." And I said, "You didn't like it?" And he said, "No, Wesley loves you." Mm. And I go, "Wow, okay. Well, do you want me to sing on the, you want me to just record everything at home?" He said, "No, can you be in LA tomorrow?" Okay. So, okay. So I went and I met Wesley, and Wesley was, what a character. This man, but he was a Texan with the Southern drawl, and he would just call me Canada. "Hey, Canada, how are you, Canada?" And I'm sure, as you know, Wesley Arkeen was very involved with Guns N' Roses.
Yes.
And they played on the record. And we had on that record, we had Abel Boreal Jr. playing drums, who is the drummer that plays with McCartney. Steve Stevens is on the record. Mm-hmm. Duff's on the record. Slash is on the record. Axl's on the record. And it was just basically
Duff was on it too.
Yeah, Duff was on it as well. And Matt Sorum was on it as well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great record. It's a little outside stylistically what I normally do. But the path was already laid. And Noel needed this thing. It needed it to be done. And I love participating in that and being a part of that whole group. I ended up staying at Duff's place for, I think it was a couple weeks when I first got there to get ready to start working on the record. Duff was an absolute gentleman. Like, he is such a nice, wow, nice man. And it was just a nice experience hanging out with all those folks. And I think Wesley's songwriting was, it's amazing songwriting. He's such a great creator.
It had some Beatles influences.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Right? He was a big Beatles.
He was. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, huge. Huge. He was a huge Beatles fan.
Had a lot of Beatles in it. Because I revisited the album. I haven't listened to it in years. I actually forgot what it sounded like. And I was kind of surprised at how good it was, because I really didn't remember much about it.
Yeah, there was a song in there I remember called L-O-V-E. And I always thought that was a really beautiful song. All that B3, all that beautiful Hammond B3 work was beautiful. And
I think what it suffered from the most was the idea of putting a grimacing monkey's head on the cover. And it just kind of, you really didn't know. It didn't really like fit the music, because when you looked at the cover, it kind of looked like it was going to sound like something really rough. And it actually wasn't. It was like actually pretty melodic and, like I said, Beatle-ish.
I never understood the cover.
No, I didn't either.
but I wasn't in a position to sort of direct that shit.
Right, so, right.
There was a lot of hands. I'm sure you can imagine with the Guns N' Roses camp, there was a lot of hands already in the fishbowl. So
sure,
I kind of just wanted to do my part, get my part done, and make sure everybody was happy and that there was a potential for this to be a live thing. But sadly, we lost Wesley shortly after the record was finished. Mm.
It was that close. Yeah, I know he passed away. It was that close, yeah. Huh?
Wow. It was pretty close. Like, we had just gotten the record out. Everybody was excited. I came home because at the time my wife and I were having our first child. I came home and I got a call that said that Wesley had passed.
Wow.
Yeah. He was a good friend. He was a lovely man. Lovely man. Like, yeah. I'll never forget the sound of his voice, you know, saying, "Hey, Canada."
Now, what was his connect? Because even back in the day, from the first Guns N' Roses album, you always heard his name associated with him. Was he kind of like a sixth member of the band, or like
what? Pretty much.
Yeah, that's what I had always heard. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much. Like, and I believe. correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he has co-writes on some of those songs too.
Like right.
Right.
If you
so look, he was very connected with that band in the early years.
Okay.
And great friends. Like they were all kind of great friends. So, otherwise, I mean, you've got all these guys playing on his record.
Yeah.
You know, it was the apparently everybody sort of toted the record as being the last performance of Axl and Duff on the same record.
Mm. Well, yeah, it was for actually quite some time.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of cool to be a part of that puzzle, you know?
Absolutely. And
find my way in there. So it was pretty cool and exciting to just see all this stuff come together. And the, you know, Noel did such a great job on that record, Noel Golden. I mean,
it's a really good sounding album. It's got great production.
It sure is. Yeah.
It's got great production.
Yeah.
So I've pulled out all these esoteric bands you've been in, but we've left out Boston and your connection to them. If you could tell us all about that.
Well, that was a kind of a funny thing. I was singing at the Alma Combo and Tom Scholz was there, and I actually didn't recognize Tom Scholz, and I remember passing by his table. I remember he was sitting, him, there was a lady and another guy, and I walked over and I just kind of just said, "Hey, anything we can play for you? Anything you want to hear?" And the lady said, "Did you play any Boston?" And I thought, wow, that's ambitious. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can give it a shot. So we did. We ended up doing Foreplay Long Time. And the keyboard player guy I was playing with at the time was he's a great player. So, and he happened to know it perfectly. So
okay. We
played it. And then after the set, I went over and we're just kibitzing. And he would just say, "Hey, man, you're a great singer." I said, "Well, oh, thanks. Thanks, man." He says, "Let me give you my card and give me your number." And then one of the guys said, "Do you know this is Tom Scholz from Boston?" And I go, "Sure it is. Sure it is. Sure it is." Yeah. And I'm Brad Pitt. I took the guy's card and I just threw it in my pocket. I never even looked at the card. I just threw it in my pocket, finished the gig, went home. And I looked at the card. And it said, "Tom Scholz."
Mm.
Really? Really? So a couple weeks later, I get a call. "Hey, Mike, this is Tom Scholz." Yeah, and Tom's a very laid back guy. He's so relaxed. Have you ever seen the SCTV bits where they're doing Perry Como?
Yeah, I'm a Perry huge, Como. Huge
you've never seen
SCTV.
Him.
We were just actually
you've
just
never
talking
seen about him so relaxed.
Yes. "I love the nightlife."
Anyway, he's very, very chill, and he just calls me and says, "Hi, Mike, this is Tom Scholz." "Yeah, sure. Yeah, hi, Tom." And I'm thinking, yeah, sure it is. "Are you available next week to come down and meet with me?" And I go, "Yeah, sure. That sounds great." "Okay, well, there'll be a ticket waiting for you at the airport under your name. And just go to the airport." It was US Air. I remember going there. Tickets there, get on the plane, go down. He picks me up. He picked me up in a Camry. I think he was driving up. Is that a Toyota? Toyota Camry.
Toyota, yeah.
Station wagon, of which I think he had the seat customized all the way back. So he could pretty much sit in the back seat because he's a very tall guy. Anyway, we went out and he took me to a hotel. And then he just, "I'll come back and get you like 7 o'clock. I said, okay. So we just went out, hung out. And then I went down again and we just kind of hung out. I think he just wanted to just kind of get to know me a little bit and we became friends. And it was the next time I went down, he took me to the studio. And I remember he had this really cool set of D drums. They were electronic drums. And I sat down and I started, and he looks at me and goes, "Oh, you play drums?" Hmm. "Well, yeah." I said, "Tom, it's my first instrument." To which he picked up a Les Paul and he and I played the entire first record together. I was singing, playing drums.
Wow.
In the air, and he's playing guitar. We played the entire first record together. I'll never forget that in my life.
Wow.
As long as I
live,
I will never forget
tremendous.
That moment.
Yeah. That's a great story.
I will never forget that moment. And it was just, if I had a cell phone, look at this, look at who that is. Look, like, yeah. it was really fun.
Wow.
I was pretty excited.
Oh, I can imagine.
Oh man. Killer. Like, I'm here with Tom Scholz and we're playing the first album, one of my favorite records.
So did he want you to join, or the offer was never made, or it was and you didn't take it?
He said he had some songs that he was working on that was just something he was working on. And he never said it was Boston. And then when I heard the tunes, I think, wow, this sounds like it could be Boston. So I did some singing, background singing. And then he just told me, you know, he said, mentioned to me, you'd be great on this. And it turned out it was Boston. So,
okay.
Yeah. And which was, wow. And you know, when they say, man, Tom Scholz is like this pretty brilliant guy. Mm-hmm. That's an understatement. That guy is a scientist. He is just.
That's what you always heard.
I've never seen a guy like when I see the way his studio was put together and the way he's methodically got it all set up. And honestly, I remember one of the most brilliant people I think I've ever been around in the presence of. It's no wonder, you know.
Well, if you listen to that album, now 76, yeah. It was released. I guess it was recorded 75, 76. And listen to those guitar sounds. Nobody had a sound like that before.
No.
That was such a groundbreaking album on so many, not just the quality of the songs, but the overall sound. There was no band that ever sounded like that.
It like those Rockmans had a certain way of creating compression.
Right.
And you know, for a lot of people who don't understand what compression, it's a dynamic hole. So like to keep a sound so it doesn't, it doesn't spread too much. It just limits and compresses. And that box had a certain sound. And I remember there was some toys that came out later. I remember there was this thing called a Korg. It was made by Korg. It was called an A3. And I know on our first Vaughn Groove album, there's a lot of that guitar that when we did our demos was all Korg A3. And it sounded great. And it sounded, had a similar sort of compression, compressed sound as the Rockman. But the Rockman was so unique. His guitar sound was one of a kind.
I remember that album. I was a senior in high school. And remember the songs were already starting to break on the record.
Yeah.
On the radio. And I remember buying the album and it was just, everybody was, if you were into rock in 76, everybody was talking about that album. It was like,
yeah. Do you remember the first time, Thomas, you took the needle and you dropped it on the very first, and then you heard More Than a Feeling come in?
About 100 times over, I did that.
I remember, I know, same thing. I remember being at my buddy Ken Wedlake, his house on Lakeshore in Oakville. I remember being at his house and he putting that record on. And I go, what the hell is that?
Exactly.
This is Boston. This is Boston. I didn't even want to, all I wanted to do was listen to that album.
I know.
I didn't want to do anything. Everybody pipe the sound. I just want to listen to this.
It had the same effect on me. And I had been exposed for years to, you know, already, you know, Purple and Sabbath and Zeppelin, but there was something about that album that was just, wow. It just knocked you off your feet. I still feel the same way about it.
Like everything about that first album, everything, the songs, the sound, the singing,
yeah,
it's the perfect.
Yeah. It really is. It's real close. If you had to pick a perfect hard rock record, that would be really, you'd have to do some deep digging to find something better than that.
Like you think about perfect records over your lifetime. Like, I mean perfect, not a flaw.
Right.
Like I mean, Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah, that would be there.
Right? Boston One, Hotel California.
Maybe. Maybe.
No, maybe.
No, I'm a fan.
Maybe.
He's
I'm
with you
I'm
on
a
that.
Fan.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm
okay.
a fan.
Okay, so Thomas, we're done. Okay, you and I, we're done. we're gonna need counseling. Okay.
No, don't get me wrong. It's a good record. I would just never think of it in those terms, but that's, you know.
It's a good record?
As us Italians say, says each your own, you know? You think it's great? I think I thought it was. I was never a huge fan of this. So, like,
Thomas, you and Mark will probably want.
I'm half. My mother's Sicilian. My father's Irish. That's why I have the Irish last name.
What's a specimen?
What's a specimen?
Yeah, it's an Italian astronaut. A specimen.
I never heard that one.
There you go.
I got some great Italian friends. They give me all the best Italian jokes.
But I was brought up in a very, since my mother was Sicilian and my grandmother, who was from the other side of, you know, came from Italy, lived with us. I was brought up in a very Italian, you know, household, even though my father was Irish.
Yeah. How come Italians will never get to the moon? There's not enough scaffolding.
These are ones
I've never, heard of these. At least, I mean, you know, as corny as they are, I've never heard them.
You can cut this part all right. out. Okay.
No, I think we'll keep
how come Italian guys wear big gold chains? So they know where to stop shaving. Okay, and moving
all
on.
Right.
Was there anything else you wanted to?
No, I think I've exhausted just about everything.
Well,
he's very exhausting.
So, Michael, we talked about it when we first started. 2025, we'll see a new Von Groove. Can you give us a little more of a timeline on things like that? Where are you guys at with the recording so far?
Well, I can throw you some titles of songs that we're working on at the moment. We're working on a tune called Dream, Adrenaline, Born to Rock, Do It Again, Fearless, Undefeated, The Heart of Forgiveness. Kind of messing around with a song called DOA, as in Dead on Arrival. There's a song, Last Call, we're kind of looking at. We're just, again, ideas. Champion is another one we're looking at. Born to Rock. These are just titles that were
working titles.
We're kind of, they're just ideas. Yeah. I could actually play something, but it would probably sound like crap. So I'll leave it for now.
We'll wait for the anticipation
for this.
When I get some, if I get some demos and stuff like that, I would be happy to send it to you on a non-sharing basis.
Yeah. Cool. I'd love to hear them.
Just so you can kind of get a vibe
cool.
where it's going. But again, the consensus and the, it's very exciting for all of us to be getting to do this after all these years and everybody doing what they've done. And, to come together and do this just been such a rejuvenating rebirth and, just great. We're having a great time with it.
Awesome. So like, you thinking toward the end of 25, we'll see a release on it?
I think it'll be, I don't think it's going to be the end. No. Like I said, I think we're pretty far along at this point. So I think you may see it
late spring,
mid-year.
Nice.
Yeah. Mid-year. Yeah.
That's great news.
Good.
We don't have a title for the record. We haven't got it. We're just like blasting songs back and forth. And
I'm sure you'll get a Japanese ideas deal with it too.
Mm. Well, we're with Frontiers. Frontiers is going to do it worldwide. So
yeah, they put out all their stuff in Japan. Frontiers.
Yeah, yeah.
Great stuff.
Nice. Good. Well,
you guys have been a lot of fun. I appreciate you allowing me to tell some Italian jokes.
I'm only half Italian.
So. I'm half Italian too. So I don't have the Brooklyn accent, though. You know.
I'm all manja cake.
So, Michael Schotten, everybody, Von Groove, look for a brand new album, mid 2025 on Frontiers Records. Thank you for talking to us tonight. Some great stories, Michael.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Thomas. Nice to be here with you guys on the, Jersey Guys podcast. This is kind of cool.
Thank you.
Made my afternoon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Take care, brother.
Thanks, guys. All the very best.
Take care.
Cheers.
All right. Bye.
Sign, washed away the shadows, crept into my mind. Seems that to change, like the dawn that walks before you. You're sure to find. Trust you've lost, you find. Yes, I'll